When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the people, to make music in the heart. Now, these words aren't mine, but rather they belong to Howard Thurman. He was a theologian who rose to prominence in the early 20th century. Thurman knew much about the power that's inherent in the Christmas story. He was born in 1899 in Daytona, Florida. And Howard Thurman felt profoundly the captivity and pain of the human species. He grew up in the era of Jim Crow, of naked and unashamed depression. He often sat at the feet of his grandmother and listened to her stories. He was captivated by her. He was deeply influenced by her. Without her, there would be no Howard Thurman as we know him. She herself was once a slave, was once chained by oppressors who saw in her something less than human. And from her, he learned the power of hopeful resistance, even when the abyss of discrimination and pain seemed to teem with a kind of powerful anti-life. But despite the pain that he saw and the pain that he bore, despite all that he experienced at the hands of flesh and blood avatars of injustice, he still believed something so profound and so transformational, so world-changing, was at the heart of the story of the birth of a baby in his own land of oppression. Thurman knew that what happened so long ago had the power to change what was happening for him then. He knew that the past came to bear upon the present, opening up new ways forward for the future. He knew that Christmas was not a mere fairy tale to be trotted out come winter time. He knew its truth deep inside of himself. And he knew that he had a part to play in making sure that its truth would not be forgotten. And what is this truth? That the birth of Jesus of Nazareth so humbly, so vulnerably ignited the spark of a revolution. A revolution still ongoing, one which may never end, yet still it rolls on throughout human history. A revolution of love, of being found in our lostness and hopelessness, of being knit back together in our brokenness and maybe learning to call our scars beautiful, of feeding the hungry in both body and soul, offering something of substance to souls, and knowing also that the gospel cannot abide the starvation of the world. It's a revolution wherein those imprisoned hear the satisfying sound of their chains breaking apart, the metal clinking on the ground as it drops with the weight of freedom. Those imprisoned by rage and anguish, imprisoned by addiction and torment. Jesus' birth reordered the politics of the world. His birth, the conquest of a Lord different than any the world had known before or since. No Caesar or king with all of their great might compares to the peaceable rule that was birthed in a manger in Bethlehem. It's a revolution in which songs of lamentation and tears give way to songs of joy as hearts burst forth with melodies calling forth a holy foolishness in the world. And this holy foolishness that dares to believe that the work of Christmas, so beautifully articulated by Howard Thurman, that work has been given to us, has been entrusted to us. It's an inexhaustible gift. A gift that 2,000 years ago promised once to renew the face of the world and still calls forth this promise today, even though it may appear as if that promise will never be satisfied. The voice calls for renewal and transformation, for new life and health and salvation. Those things were given to us by the emptying of God into the flesh of Jesus. A true gift, if there ever was one. But the gift is perpetually given to us. It wasn't just way back when. The gift of carrying forth this message comes to bear upon us every time we gather to keep this feast. The gift of reincarnating the incarnation in our very lives, of making the story of Christmas come alive again in a world bereft of the imagination to believe that we can indeed be made whole. For the yoke of their burden, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor you have broken as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the tramping warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace. I mean, truly, this vision is one that only a prophet embedded in chaos can imagine. Isaiah spoke as if his words were themselves a clarifying fire burning true, burning away the fear-inducing power of any tyrannical forces that stood in the way of the unfolding reality of this new reign of God. His people and those who came after him, they needed these words to be true. They needed them to be life-giving now. Right, in their present, but more than just now, they needed them to be calling forth a new life in their future. And this oracle, along with others, became a messianic foundation upon which they could anchor their hopes and dreams for this better world, for this more beautiful world, for this world saved from oppressions of many sorts and wearing many different faces and going by many different names. But they never could have imagined that these words would come to pass by means of the supremacy of God being cast aside for the vulnerability of a child born to impoverished parents amidst a new tyranny. I mean, something happened that night. Something changed. God, now different than before, God taking on our flesh to redeem us from within as one of us. God, through weakness, exercising the power to render sin null and void and to call forth a new human family. And just as the people of old could not grasp the fullness of this mystery, so too have we not yet found the bottom of this well of life and salvation. But for a world that still struggles to set aside its old ways and grab hold of the better angels of its nature, the unplumbed depth of this beautiful exchange of divinity and humanity, it's more than enough. It speaks of life amidst the ruins of skeletons rattling together as new breath fills their lungs. It tells us that the world isn't over. In fact, even now, in this moment, it still has just begun. So here we are on this night, having told the story once again, having had that story told to us, the story of God becoming flesh in Jesus, of God knowing pain and brokenness and suffering, but also knowing the beauty of such fragile hopes that we humans hold in our hearts, knowing the sweetness of having brokenness give way to life and health and second chances. This is the story of God's ever-present humanity. It's the story of the axis of the world shifting, of it changing, leaning towards a different sun. And now it's our job to leave here and keep the story alive. So may these words, also from Howard Thurman, give us a reason to keep the joy of Christmas alive, even on the days when it feels as if, frankly, we have nothing left to give. I will light candles this Christmas. Candles of joy despite all the sadness. Candles of hope where despair keeps watch. Candles of courage for fears ever present. Candles of peace for tempest-tossed days. Candles of grace to ease heavy burdens. Candles of love to inspire all my living. Candles that will burn all year long. Amen.